Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, why are the germs so bad now?
They're bionic now. The germs are bionic.
Bad. I've got a turbo cold, and it's not COVID because I've tested 3 times during the course of my sickness. And I am going on a week plus of feeling like I'm going to die. When does it end? Is this just my life?
It's a momentary thing, Erin. We're all going to be great soon. This is me being glass half full, though I don't really believe it, because if you'll recall several weeks ago, my petty was people who were like, are you sick again? Because I too have been, I have caught everything that has gone around.
It is a nightmare, and I pray that soon my body runs out of snot. I had no idea that there was this much space inside of my face and chest, and that's gross.
I wish I were there to steam you like I steam my cat Midge.
Ew. This week, we are joined by Jessica Valenti, Amanda Nguyen, and Tien Tran to take on the following questions. What stories on reproductive rights aren't getting talked about enough? Who is a sidekick and who gets to be the main character? And is divorce ever funny? All this and more right now. Alyssa, let's get started with news. We're going to do something a little bit different today. Yeah, so today, like squares of butter into a croissant dough, we are folding our interview into our news segment for a couple of reasons. Have you ever done that? I can't do that. Fold the butter.
I'm not a good laminator.
I can't do it, but we're going to do it in our news segment this week because we often cover similar stories to our guest today. And in fact, her work makes it easier for us to do our work. And second, because she is simply a good hang. So we figured let's just combine it into one segment and let's meet her. Today's guest is Jessica Valenti. You may know her from her current project, the Substack Abortion Every Day, where she writes about the current state of abortion in the U.S. OGs might know her as the founder of the blog Feministing and author of 5 books, including Full Frontal Feminism and The Purity Myth. Jessica Valenti, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you for having me.
We are so glad you're here. Can you tell us a little bit about your Substack project, Abortion Every Day? Like, what gave you the idea? Whatsoever gave you the idea to write about abortion every day? And how's it going?
I mean, it's going poorly, like for anyone who is writing about abortion right now, right? Like, it's a difficult beat. But honestly, it sort of happened organically because, as you know, there's so much happening with abortion. There's so much going on every single day, that after Roe was overturned and I started, I already had an existing Substack and I started writing about what was going on. I realized, I'm writing multiple things a day. I'm just gonna formalize this and call it a thing. But really the hope, and I think we're there, was to create something that made people feel not so overwhelmed, right? Like, that's the hard thing about everything that's going on with abortion rights. One of the many hard things is that we're being so inundated with bad news, bad bills, horror stories. And really that's part of the Republican strategy, is to just completely overwhelm us. And they're hoping that that overwhelm will sort of freeze us into an action. And so the hope is that by providing, you know, a daily email roundup of what's going on, not just politically, but, you know, culturally, that folks will feel a little bit more in control and on top of what often feels like an uncontrollable situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jessica, I use your Instagram and your Substack as my nightly read. And you cover so much of what really isn't found anyplace else. But let's start off with something that actually is being covered. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us everything that's happening in Texas right now with the lawsuit that is being brought by women who are pregnant and feel the state of Texas has fucked them over?
This is great. I mean, it's horrible, but it's great. So 5 women from Texas who were denied vital health care despite being allowed it, like air quotes, allowed it under Texas law. They are suing them, saying that they were denied this care, even though their health and lives were at risk, even though their pregnancies had fatal abnormalities. One of the stories, a woman ended up with sepsis, was literally told, like, you cannot come back. We cannot help you unless you are close to death. And guess what? She got very close to death. She ended up in the ICU with sepsis. Just horror story after horror story. And so they are coming forward and they've brought this lawsuit. And their hope is to, they're not trying to rescind the law. They want to amend the law so that the exception is better worded. But I think really this is about, you know, raising people's consciousness about what is happening and the real life impact that this has on people in the lawsuit. There's a sentence that I've been thinking about, and it says something along the lines of, these women and women across the country have been denied dignified care, right? It's it's the dignity of it. And I think that that has really been something that stuck with me as I've been doing this newsletter. Yeah, we haven't seen, there's been no reported deaths yet, though I am 100% confident that there have been deaths. And so a lot of the stories we're seeing are women who have suffered, right? And the anti-choice response to that that I've seen has been, well, look, the laws are working. They're alive. They're okay. They're alive. Right. And so the laws are fine. No talk about the suffering that they had to go through, the lack of dignified care. And if our standard for care for women is like, well, you're alive, aren't you? I think we're in a pretty bad fucking place.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of dignity, Florida, a place currently with very, very little dignity. Florida's Republican-led legislature on Tuesday, just a couple days ago, filed bills that would ban abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, which we all know most people don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to, I don't know, thread a Floridian needle and offer exemptions for victims of rape and incest. Here's the dignity part. Yeah. If they can provide official proof of the crime. Jessica, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, it's just, you know, no rape and incest exceptions are real. So, like, let's be clear on that from the get-go. These are not things that people are actually able to make use of, in large part because of language like that, right? And so in addition to saying that you have to get abortion care before 15 weeks, which, again, is a hurdle that is a very difficult one for rape and incest victims to cross because so many of them are in denial, because so many of them are minors. So they have that one hurdle. And then they have this other hurdle that's, you need to bring some sort of proofs, like a, you know, a court document, a police report to prove that you've been attacked. And anyone who knows anything knows that the vast majority of victims will never, ever go to police or report their attacks because of everything that happens when they do and because of the, you know, inequity in the criminal justice system. And so what this law is saying is you don't get health care if you have been raped unless you're willing to put yourself through the trauma of reporting it. And most people won't.
Mm-hmm. I guess just get a receipt the next time you get raped so that you can bring it to the doctor.
Like, well, and that's what I thought was so dodgy about the way they said it. Proof of a crime, is that a report or a conviction? Because that doesn't work.
That, I mean, and that's the thing. And like different, right, like prosecutors will argue different things. And they have kept it very vague for a reason. And they also had very vague language in terms of penalties for abortion. It's anyone who provides or actively participates in an abortion. So what does actively participate in mean? I have to assume the person who's getting the abortion has actively participated. Does the person who drove them, you know, actively participate? What about someone who lent them money for the procedure? Are they actively participating? That language is kept incredibly deliberately vague so that whatever, you know, radical district attorney decides that they want to bring charges, they can interpret that how they would like to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another thing, one of the women, I think, in Texas who is behind this, the lawsuit, her water broke too early for her fetus to be viable. And in that case, would the fetus itself be an active participant in the abortion since the fetus was sort of like, yeeted itself? It was like, okay. And that, but that's, I mean, I know I'm being like glib right now, but that is the way a lot of miscarriages work. It's like something happens. There's a fetal issue or there's like some sort of genetic thing, and you're, and the fetus or the pregnancy itself is just like, nope, not this time. And like, yeah. So what it just, it's so, it's like people trying to write laws who like couldn't even pass biology. It's like they're writing fanfic about what pregnancy is, you know?
It really, really is. I wrote a column a few months ago about like the kind of people who are writing these laws and enforcing them. And it's like the dumbest, most obnoxious guy you knew in high school. Like the worst, the literal worst person you knew, that is who is writing these laws. That is who is arresting people, right? Like it's, yeah. So infuriating.
Yeah. And you know, there's a part of me that thinks, Alyssa mentioned the 6-week cutoff, and a lot of states are trying to do a 6-week cutoff. And I feel like in these cases, lawmakers are benefiting from the fact that language around pregnancy in like gynecology is very confusing. Like the fetus is not 6 weeks old when you are 6 weeks pregnant. Do you think that gynecologists should get together and like rejigger the way that they describe pregnancy? Like, would that help with the public perception of the way that abortion works and the way that pregnancy works? Because like there is no 1 week pregnant. You cannot take a pregnancy test when you are 1 week pregnant because you haven't even ovulated yet. You know, it's like,
right. It's too complicated for them. They will never, like, whatever threshold they are at now, they'll find a way to move it. They'll find a way to change it. And like, whenever you present them with the reality of what happens during pregnancy, they literally cannot process it. Or they just say you're lying. Like, look at what happened when those pictures of early pregnancy, early abortion went viral, right? And they lost their minds. That got messages, you photoshopped the fetus out of that picture. You like removed it before you put, like, just the most wild shit, because they truly have no sense of what pregnancy is actually like or what pregnancy actually looks like. And when confronted with the truth of it, it's like their minds explode.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. How do you feel about the Walgreens news? Like, they're only allowing abortion medication to be dispensed from their pharmacies where it is legally permissible. What's the latest with that?
But they're not, right? Like, so these, you know, 28 state AGs sent them threatening letters. First, they got back to the Kansas Attorney General and said, we're not going to dispense or ship anything to Kansas where abortion is legal. And then they came out and, you know, they're basically doing whatever these Republican state AGs want. But because of the public backlash to that, which is understandable, yesterday they released a very, shadily worded statement saying, we're just going to follow the law and we're going to dispense it where it's legal. But that is something that's very in contrast to what they are telling the state attorney general. So I have to assume that what they're saying is, if the state attorney general says it's illegal, even if the law says that it's legal, we're going to go with the state attorney general, right? Like, so they're being very fishy about the way they're saying it, trying to thread this needle of making people happy, doing damage control. But obviously they've caved. And I think that is just going to be the case everywhere. And so now we have to wait to see what happens with CVS and more independent pharmacies. Mm-hmm. But the anti-choice groups and anti-choice activists have basically been parking themselves outside of various pharmacies as a way to threaten and intimidate in the same way that they do at abortion clinics, in the hope that pharmacists are just going to say, you know what, like, this is not worth it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, Walgreens did a little bit of fucking around and finding out, though, right? Because in California, like, Governor Newsom has announced that, okay, we're not going to do any business with you. Do you think that California's, I mean, I know that, you know, neither of us are in Gavin Newsom's office or in his head or anything like that, but do you think that California's actions are part of what spurred Walgreens to kind of like freak out and be like, oh, no, we're still doing it?
I think so, yes. And I think just the public outrage as well. I mean, what Walgreens forgot and what a lot of people forget is that the vast majority of American people want abortion to be legal. And they certainly don't want their pharmacies telling them that they can't have access to legal medication. And so I think it was a combination of, yes, California, but also I feel quite confident that they are hearing from a lot of customers as well.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I learned an interesting factoid this morning. And that is that counties that voted for Joe Biden in 2020 account for around 70% of the GDP.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. And so there's something to me that's like, you know, I feel as though Newsom, even if what he's doing is sort of political theater, is like a really good example, because California is like 15% of this country's economy. Like blue, like Washington, Oregon, like states with big ports, New York, they're like blue states have a ton of economic heft. And I feel as though they're not really throwing their weight around as much as they could. How do you feel about that, Jessica?
100%. 100%. With Newsom, he's been doing a ton of terrific stuff. And at this point, I don't mm-hmm. give a shit if it's political theater, because he is doing mm-hmm. something and it is having an impact. And like, that is what we need. And that's what we want to see. Like, I want to see politicians being proactive on the offense on this, because we have the public support, we have the votes, and people need to stop acting as if we don't, as if this like is something that Americans are truly equally, you know, split on or polarized on, when they're really not.
I was going to say too, here in New York, I feel like Governor Hochul could be doing so much more and really sort of doing a little bit more Newsoming in her own right. And we're really not.
We're not. I don't hear anything about it. Right? Like, I feel like
I hear
something about California and abortion every single day. I don't hear that in New York. And it's too bad. Like, we have the ability to, obviously a lot of people are traveling to New York for abortion care. And so mm-hmm. I would love to hear more about what are we going to do for them? How are we going to protect them? How are we going to protect providers? What kind of money are we going to put forward? Are we going to start putting billboards in anti-choice states telling people how to get to New York for care? We should.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not only that, but as to Aaron's point about the counties that went for Biden, participating so greatly in our national wealth, whatever that might be. So much of the aid goes to states like Mitch McConnell's state. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like our states really could be just doubling down a little bit more. What is happening in Iowa? They are really, the fuckery is widespread.
Which thing in Iowa? The websites? There's so much happening.
Jessica, tell us everything that's happening in Iowa. This is our listeners. We're so lucky because our listeners are from all over. Awesome. And sometimes this news is just too much to keep up with. So
it is a lot. So there's an Iowa bill that is very similar, actually, to a Texas bill that is seeking to ban pro-choice websites. Yep. In the state, they specify that they want them banned at libraries, schools, you know, like high schools, universities, but really it's everywhere. And they want to give citizens the right to sue internet service providers who don't block those websites in the state. And so, again, that's another thing that like Texas is doing. They're taking a page out of Texas's book. It is so wild. In Texas, in the Texas bill, they actually specifically name some of the websites that they want banned, you know, websites like Aid Access and Hey Jane, any place that provides, you know, abortion medication for shipping or information about abortion medication. There's a line in the Iowa bill that says it's not just, abortion or you're, you know, selling abortion. Anyone who enables the aiding and abetting of abortion. So it's like, they're like, how much can we stretch this out to include mm-hmm. everyone so that people are scared right. out of their minds and, you know, and won't get the care that they need?
It's almost like they don't understand that women have been having abortions for the entirety of human history. Mm-hmm. And they weren't pharmaceutical or surgical in a lot of cases, but like, they've been having abortions. It's not mm-hmm. like every time somebody became pregnant prior to like Margaret Sanger that everyone was like, whoops, well, guess yeah. I'm just going to have this.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild that they think banning the internet will prevent it, like a practice that's as old as civilization itself.
Right. I think they know it's just about making it more dangerous, making it more difficult, making it harder, and terrorizing women along the way, because that's all this is doing, right? Is like, you're just terrorizing the women who are going to get that care no matter what, but you're making them terrified in the meantime. You're making them paranoid. You're making them not tell anyone in their life because they're afraid that the people in their life are going to turn them in, which is, you know, what happens in places like Texas. And so you're essentially creating the situation where women who are already scared and dealing with a really stressful situation are now going to be even more frightened and also alone and lack that support.
One of the other things in Iowa that I thought, it's like, these are the things that I find the most frustrating, I guess, maybe. I mean, it's all frustrating, but the amount of sort of subterfuge they're going to confuse people. So in the governor's new healthcare legislation, she is spending like $1.5 million to open up new pregnancy resource centers, which sounds like a good thing. But the whole point of that is to counsel against abortion.
Yeah. They're all like across all of those anti-choice states, they are increasing funding for anti-abortion centers. I'm trying very hard to start calling them anti-abortion centers rather than crisis pregnancy centers. They're putting a lot of stock in these places that are not just anti-abortion, lie to women, right? Conceal information about their health, but are completely inept, right? Like there was a whistleblower in Kentucky who came forward. She was a volunteer nurse at an anti-abortion center, and they were using expired disinfectant.
Oh my God.
Fuck that.
Yes. And they were using lubricant for the ultrasound wand that was meant to go outside on the body. And they were using that for internal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And she went to the Kentucky medical board, the nursing board, and they didn't do anything. There was no consequences because these places are so lightly regulated, barely regulated at all, that they can essentially do anything they want. And when you look at the numbers, they're like giving out like essentially what amounts to like a package of diapers per person who comes in. They are not like helping women in any way. All of that money goes towards salaries and like promotional campaigns to get the word out. Like they're not helping
anyone.
Aren't
they also trying to like give women a hard sell on putting their babies up for adoption? They don't want these. I feel like, and you know, this is maybe just me being paranoid, but I feel like they don't really want poor women to be mothers. They want them to give birth, but they don't want them to be allowed to be mothers. I think they want their children to be given up for adoption for the millions of evangelical couples that are waiting to adopt children who
100%.
Can't have their own.
100%. And I think you would probably find that like a lot of those centers have connections to those like Christian adoption centers, and they have relationships, you know, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we don't want to take too much more of your time, but like, just bringing it back to your Substack, is it hard to write about this constantly? And like, what brings you hope writing about this every single day? What brings you hope and what keeps you going?
I think honestly, this is part of the reason I'm on TikTok and I like TikTok is because seeing all of like the younger feminists being so outraged and doing their thing, like that is what makes me feel like we're going to be okay. Because again, like public support is on our side. And seeing women and young women in particular and young feminists be so pissed off and be so furious, like their anger and outrage absolutely is fueling me.
What would happen if you ran out of material? Like, what would you do if suddenly like, what would you do?
I'd be so happy. I would take like the world's biggest, take a huge nap, pop an Ambien and see you in like 3 days.
Amazing. Jessica Valenti, where can our listeners find you? We'll put a link to your Substack in our show notes, but where else can they connect?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all of the places, and I'm on TikTok under Auntie Killjoy, which is fun. I enjoy it there. So yeah, all of the places. But yeah, the best place to find me is definitely at jessica.substack.com.
Amazing. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us. Come back again sometime. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be more for us to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. Stick around. We will be right back. And welcome back. Alyssa, you're not my sidekick. We're like co-side.
Am I your side piece?
No. That means a totally different thing.
I know. I was just being funny.
You're a side piece.
I was just being funny. No, I don't mind if I can be your sidekick.
I don't want a sidekick. I don't want to be the main person where the buck stops. I want to be someone who.
So there's no lead. We're co-sidekicks.
We're like Lincoln Arms. This is a two-hander. Mm-hmm. This is what they call a two-hander. Well, I'm excited to talk about sidekicks today with two of my favorite main characters. Our first panelist is the founder of the nonprofit Rise, a 2019 Nobel Peace Prize nominee, and a 2022 Time Woman of the Year. It's Amanda Nguyen. Amanda, welcome.
Hi.
Every time I read your credits, when I talk about you with like a friend or mention you, I'm like, yeah, she's like a Nobel Peace Prize nominee, and she does she talked about Target on my podcast.
I love it.
How are you doing? What's new with you?
I'm doing well. I'm organizing my fridge. We just talked about vacuums earlier, so you know, there's the little things that get me through.
Up next, you can watch our next panelist in the newest season of How I Met Your Father on Hulu, streaming now. Or if you're in LA, you can catch her doing stand-up at Dynasty Typewriter with Netflix is a Joke Radio on March 21st. Tien Tran, welcome.
Hello.
So good to see you.
It's so good to see you too.
I want to start talking a little bit about sidekicks with you because you play a supporting character in How I Met Your Father, Ellen Gilbert.
Yes, I do.
is she a sidekick? And is it more fun to play somebody who like supports the main character or to be the main character?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Do you want to get into an existential conversation about the industry? Because then that'll...
Sure.
Because I do feel a certain sort of way about like specifically characters of color, mm-hmm. and like queer characters and queer characters of color.
Oh, let's get into it. Let's go. Let's get right there. Let's do it. Tien, we're here. Let's hear it.
I mean, okay. So for me personally, as an experience being in the show, I actually really do love being a part of the like supporting cast because I still feel very new in my sort of acting career. And so I think I would be able – I don't know if I would be able to carry a show as the lead right now, just to be
okay,
totally
I'm just,
honest.
Yes. I would be the audience.
Amanda would watch.
Yes.
Okay, Amanda, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I would love to at some point, and, like, that's something that I'm working towards. But, like, industry-wide, I feel like – it's frustrating to see so many like very specific sort of like, you know, you always have your white leads and then you have your like characters of color who are made to be sidekicks. And they are oftentimes made to be sort of like their whole purpose is just to help this person on their journey. And so you very rarely learn anything about them. You very rarely get any sort of like internal conflicts about them. And so I would like that to change, but to answer your question of like currently on the show, like I do this, they're going to be like, oh, she hates being on the show. No, I love being on the show as a supporting cast member, and like getting to slowly start to see that like they are giving more of our other characters kind of main character energy, as everyone says.
Amanda, you have been nodding this whole time. So I want to like keep opening whatever can of worms Tien started opening. And I would love to hear your thoughts on who's a sidekick and who's a main character.
Okay, well, it's, as we're recording, International Women's History Day. And I think that women, and especially women of color, are the main characters of their lives. And that there's absolutely an issue with who gets to have that empathy to be a main character, not only within Hollywood, but also within our government, within who gets to, like that Hamilton song, right? Like who gets to pen and tell my story or whatever. It's really getting it wrong. But, you know, I would like to tell folks who don't see themselves represented that your story matters too. That doesn't mean that there aren't sidekicks out there. In fact, like some of my favorite characters in storytelling of all time are sidekicks, like Samwise Gamgee. He's the real hero, in my opinion, of Lord of the Rings. Spoiler. But or Chewbacca. But yeah, I think those who are underrepresented deserve to be main characters in all the ways.
Mm-hmm. What have been some viewing experiences for you or reading experiences for you where there has been a sidekick that has frustrated you because you're like, I really wish that this person had more to them?
I can talk about the other side of that, which is I just read this book called A Mountain Sings, and it's by a Vietnamese poet, a woman who wrote it. And I had never written or read a book by a Vietnamese woman before. And the way that it touched me, I just read it on the plane, like the entire sitting. And then I was eating dinner with a friend and I actually pulled the book out as we were waiting. I was like, I'm so sorry to be that awful friend, but I have to finish this book. Anyways, so, the way that I had never seen myself represented like that, the way that the words just reached out from the page and gripped me, I had never had that experience before. And, you know, it really just shook me to my core. I know that like that's what representation is, but I don't like it when we are used again as a character foil for another person. When our trauma is exploited, you know, when you look into the literature or movies about the Vietnam War, you know, in Vietnam called the American War, right? Like the perspective is often, you know, not of us by us. Even if we are getting visibility in terms of side characterships, mm-hmm. you know, when do we get to be the main character? And in this book, it was amazing.
And you know what? Honestly, I don't think taking out a book to read as you're waiting for a restaurant is any ruder than taking your phone out.
That's true.
I agree.
No ruder. Alyssa, what do you make of the sidekick trope? And like, what do you make of, so just so you, our listeners know that the reason that we're talking about this is because there was an article in the New York Times about Kamala Harris sort of as like the president's sidekick. And we were like, interesting. How do we feel about this? And Alyssa, I was wondering how you feel about the article and like the sidekick in politics in general.
I mean, I actually, so when I thought about it, I don't know, I don't agree. It's like, I think that there are some people who could be considered sidekicks. I think that Kamala's kind of like needs, I think that someone needs to give Kamala some like good platforms where she can just go out and kind of do her own thing. I feel like she got some of the really hard shit that she's only going to get beat up on. And it's like when I look at it, I do think that Joe Biden was more of a sidekick to Barack Obama. And like, I'm not sure if that's a good thing. Like in politics, I think there are too many egos for there ever to really be a sidekick. Like I thought about it and it's like no one, like when you look in pop culture, you can identify sidekicks. And the funny thing is that in pop culture, I thought about like my favorite TV shows and my favorite character in all the TV shows is the sidekick. Like they mm-hmm. are the person that's more relatable to me. And they are the person who you kind of are like always rooting for, you know, much more than the main character because they're getting all the resources, right? So it's like, I prefer Rhoda Morgenstern to Mary Tyler Moore. You know, Ethel was as funny as Lucy. Who doesn't want more Cousin Greg in Succession? I mean, it is, I feel like sidekicks are my people. And in DC and in politics, it's like, I don't know. I feel like people need to maybe like let Kamala be Kamala and let her be her own person. I feel like DC political culture is trying to define her as more of a sidekick, and that's really fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems though as though the idea of the sidekick is like a little bit feminized. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. the assumption mm-hmm. is like I think back to a few years ago, there was a show on network TV called like Single Parents or something like that. Mm-hmm. So and like there were ads all over in Los Angeles, you know, billboards and stuff. There was a billboard for Single Parents, and front and center on the billboard was like a white guy. And it's like, how many single parents, in terms of like percentage in the US, are like white guys raising children on their own? And the answer, like, it is completely, like, antithetical to the reality of, like, but they had to make a show with, like, a white guy in the middle, even though it was a show about an experience that is primarily had by women and women of color in a lot of cases. And it was, like, I remember thinking, like, this is very stupid, and I will not watch this show because of the, like, just because of the billboard. It like made me so angry. I wonder, Tien, what you make of, you know, do you think men think of women as natural sidekicks?
I mean, yes. What is that famous phrase, like, behind every, what is it, behind every great man is a woman
exhausted
doing everything,
woman?
Like, yeah, like a totally exhausted, like, a woman who hasn't been an underappreciated woman. I think it's just like, yeah, we live in this, like, cis heteronormative patriarchy, and I think we're starting to change that. But I know a lot of my, you know, dear friends who are in sort of, not sort of, who are in straight, right, look at me hedging on saying straight, straight relationships. You know, we have women, like, amazing friends of mine who are, like, working badasses, but at the end of the day, they are still doing so much both emotional labor and also just, like, labor in the home. And, like, it's almost like the men, they're not being like, you got to keep the house, but it's not like they're saying anything differently. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's
not like
a lot of,
I got to keep the house.
Yeah, they're like, not like, I've got to keep the house. There's a lot of weaponized incompetence going around. And and I think because of that, it, like, relegates women to becoming sort of the sidekick or doing everything or, like, making sure that everything is taken care of, which is fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, you are, you know, you work as the head of an organization and you're very visible. Do you ever get treated by people who don't know any better? Do people ever treat you like you couldn't possibly be in charge? And how does that go?
Oh yeah. I get mansplained all the time about the laws that I've written. And
can you tell us any, like, specific stories, like, yes, about someone telling you about a law that you wrote?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So there are times when I go and I sit, you know, in some kind of political office and we've passed the law there already. And the person goes, oh yeah, yeah, there was this law that was passed. And, like, here are all the tenants. And, you know, at first I wanted to fight back. And then I just realized I'm just going to let this sink in and then just wait for the dust to settle and say, yeah, I wrote that. And then watch as the embarrassment sinks in. That, like, that's a very satisfying moment for me. there have been plenty of times where I've walked in and, you know, I had to meet the principal member, whatever. And, you know, my assistant, who is a guy, will walk in and they'll be addressing him as the CEO and founder and not me. And I remember this one instance where the, you know, it's an intern in front, but an intern did that. And and the member came out and addressed me. And on the table, there was an article and it was featuring me. And she put it up.
Shut
and
up.
The intern's face went super pale.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is that, you know, I think that in the history of the patriarchy, women have been side characters. We are the wind beneath their wings. Our thoughts are their ideas. You know, a lot of people say Albert Einstein, his most brilliant ideas were actually his wife's, right? And or his first wife. you know, I think that in surviving what society has deemed as, okay, well, you have the characteristics of what a side character is, but you don't actually want to be slotted as a side character. How do you survive that? And, you know, sometimes I've just leaned in to people's assumptions because there is a lot of power to being underestimated.
Alyssa, you're nodding. I feel like this has happened to you.
I couldn't agree more. It's like every time, and look, I always try to chalk it up. I was young, you know, when I worked in the White House, I was young. I was a woman. But when I first took over as White House Deputy Chief of Staff, because the person who had come before me would take me to meetings before I had been White House Deputy Chief, and I saw how people treated him. And then when I took his job, I mean, you guys, some of those meetings, I was like, wait, are they going to physically fucking pat me on the head? Like, am I just going to get a pat on the head right now? And it was really hard. But to Amanda's point, my I kind of like weaponized being the sidekick or underestimated, because they'd be like, you know who underestimated me? Fucking Governor Cuomo. He underestimated me. And you know who didn't? Chris Christie. He came into me and it's like, and I don't care if everyone fucking hates Chris Christie, but I'm just going to tell you the truth. He came in and he treated me like I was his fucking equal and was like, here's what I need and here's what I'm going to do. He came prepared. He gave me a presentation. This was all during Hurricane Sandy. And I was like, you know what? Fucking thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because it was always hard for me. And a lot of times, and Amanda, I'm sure that you have done this, I come in prepared like I'm going to war. I used to go in prepared like there was no question anyone was ever going to ask me that I didn't know. And I didn't care if I looked like Gidget in real life. You know, like, I don't care. I was unassuming. And sometimes I had like sweaters that I could have made me tender heart Care Bear, but who knows? And to go in and everyone's like, oh, hi, precious, you know, like a little pat on the head. And then you're like, all right, let's get down to business. And you just open up with both barrels and you're like, oh, I'm not here to play. Like, let's go. And it is, you will see people literally shift back in their seats. You will see them like, oh my God, I thought this was going to be easy. Maybe it's not going to be so easy. And then you're asking them the questions that they can't fucking answer, but you can. And you're asking those questions because you know they can't answer them because they underestimated you. And so that is definitely something that, like, I never mind. Like, go ahead and underestimate me, you know? And it was one of those things where even when we'd be in groups, like political meetings or like a DNC event, and they'd all gravitate towards the guys. You know, everyone wanted to talk to them. And then Dan Pfeiffer, God bless. Shout out to Pfeiffer at all times. He was like, ah, you have to talk to Alyssa. She's the one who's got all the power. And, you know, that was always his... That was always his go-to when we were things like that. But it never ended. It never really changed. I mean, even the people who I threw back on their heels and was like, oh no, I'm loaded for bear. You know, the next time you'd have a meeting with them, they didn't always change their approach. But, you know, at least I felt more confident every time. But yeah, being Amanda 100%, like... So I was never lucky enough to be in a meeting where an article about me was on the table and I could just be like, while we're waiting, let's open up this magazine. That never happened.
Amanda, I'm picturing you holding it up.
Yeah. No, my assistant did. I was like, that one.
Don't mind if I do.
Amanda, I'm picturing you holding up a magazine with your face on the cover over your face and then lowering it.
It was actually more like, I present to you. Do you recognize this? Is this familiar?
Oh my goodness, that poor intern. That poor intern.
No, that intern really deserved it. That intern deserved that moment. You should know better.
I guess it is like a they have to learn kind of a moment.
Yeah.
Like, look, it was harsh, but they have to learn. They must learn. Is there ever like a moment where you kind of find yourself preferring to be the sidekick? Because like in some cases you want to go into something and be like, okay, I'm in charge. But other times it's just sort of like how do you sink into a sidekick role knowing that it's not your time to be at the forefront? You know what I mean? Like if you're working with somebody else or they're the ones that should be speaking up, like how do you kind of like navigate that, being used to being like somebody that's more at the forefront? Amanda, you're nodding. I'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah, allyship. You know, I think that's one of the key moments in which it's not about being a voice for the voiceless. You know, if you have privilege, resources, and let's say, you know, a lot of the work that I do is organizing for sexual violence around the world. You know, I'm not a constituent of every single country. So in a different country, you know, it's their moment. And how do you uplift them by stepping out of that limelight and making sure that their voices are centered, not yours. Yeah, pass the mic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember reading, Alyssa, that like women in the Obama administration kind of had a strategy for de-sidekickification them, you know, whatever. I just made up a word.
Yeah.
But de-sidekickifying themselves by essentially citing each other in meetings and being like so-and-so, like Tien said, Amanda
and
said.
And sometimes if that person wasn't in the meeting, they'd be like, you know what? Kathy was making that point yesterday. Let's get her, you know? Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, you'd be in the meeting the day before and someone would make a point and no one would really – sometimes – not all the time. On occasion, someone would not pay that much attention. You'd be like, all right, it's like a fart in the forest. I guess they weren't into it. And then the next day, people are citing it like it was their idea. And it was, no, hold on. Let's get Nancy Ann. Let's get Kathy, you know? And it was a useful exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's something that we try to do in writers' rooms as well. Like in the experiences that I've had in different writers' rooms and just being in, you know, you're trying to in rooms that I've been in have been like very diverse, but there is a particular type of white man that will take up a lot of space and like try to take ideas from other people, or in other words, just essentially repeat the idea that women have just pitched is a joke. And so we'll always like, I think it's like a kind of an unspoken thing amongst like the female writers to be like, hey, like, that's actually, like, Sarah's joke, that Sarah brought that up, like, that's a great idea. Or, like, trying to make sure that we have space and time to, like, acknowledge who actually came up with the idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed that, too, in writers' rooms. I think, like, a really healthy one, everyone does that for people. Because I think that there's, like, I try to give people a good faith read where it's like sometimes you just are sort of like lost in your own thoughts and you hear something but don't realize that you're hearing it. And so it kind of like intermingles with your own thoughts and you don't necessarily remember that someone else said it. You know what I mean? Because you're in this like, you know, soup basically of everyone's thoughts and ideas in a writer's room and stuff. But if I would hear something pitched that was already pitched by somebody, I would say like, oh yeah, like Tom was saying that yesterday, or like Tara said that yesterday, and I thought it was like a really good idea, and I'm really excited we're talking about it again. Like, here's something else. Like, or, oh yeah, plus one to that, you know, or like jump in after somebody's really good idea and hope that like it just kind of people register who said it just because it doesn't appear that way in scripts. Like, you're not like, oh, this person wrote this joke. Yeah. But in a room, it kind of matters for everyone to understand that everybody's contributing for sure. Let's wrap up the sidekick conversation with who is your sidekick and who are you a sidekick for? I'm going to give you some time to think about who your sidekick is. Or are you in a relationship with somebody or a friendship with somebody where you switch off being the main person and the sidekick? Alyssa, you go first. Who's your sidekick?
Well, I think that my sidekick and I switch on and off, and it's my oldest friend, Kara. And it's like sometimes you're the one supporting and sometimes she's the one supporting. And I think that we just have such a good flow after all these years. Literally, I was talking to her about a premiere and she was like, she calls me Chicken. She's like, Chicken, let me know if you need any help. Like, she's like, it's your night. And I was like, no. I was also like, Kara, we're good. There are people who are going to set it up. We don't have to like work the rope line or anything. And she's like, but that is just, you know, that is, and I was her maid of honor. I mean, I just love her so much. Also, I think that my cat Midge is my sidekick.
You know what? Maid of honor is a sidekick role. That's your friend
totally.
Will you be my sidekick on this very important day for me? I am Princess, you are sidekick.
And you have to be the best sidekick you can be. That is I actually think it's one of the most important sidekick roles.
Maid of honor. Interesting. Amanda.
Get it wrong.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to mess that one up. Amanda, no. What are your thoughts? Who is your sidekick and who are you a sidekick for? Also, have you ever been a maid of honor and was it fun or no?
That one is too personal. Maybe like I'll reveal that in a book or something because it went horribly. Oh my god, I'll be having like flashbacks.
Oh no!
Yeah. I also have a mutual side click slash main character switch off moment, but with a dog. So my dog, Lucky, I mean, like, if anyone has ever owned a dog, they know that, like, when you're walking the dog, you're definitely the sidekick to your dog. Like, everybody comes up and, like, pets your dog, and you're just like, I'm also here. You know what I'm saying? Lucky was a golden retriever. And I actually want to get him painted because I like all those, like, you know, traditional paintings of dogs, and they look like they're like generals or something. Anyways, that's what I'm he's definitely not a sidekick.
Oh, that's so cute. You know what? We got one of those. We didn't get one of like him looking like a general or like a fancy Edwardian boy. Yeah. We didn't get one of those for our dog, but we did. Like, there is this thing on Etsy where you can send them a photo of your pet and they will like make a painting of it. And we did that and it looks really nice. And my kid.
I have several.
My kid points at it sometimes and is like, Luca. Luca. Aww. And it's like, yep, that's a painting of Luca. That's how you know it's a good painting, if a baby knows that what it's supposed to be. Tien, same question for you. Who's your sidekick and who are you a sidekick for?
I mean, I think I'm in, like, I think my wife and I are, like, good sort of sidekick main character. We're, like, both pushing each other to be main characters. So I think we're just kind of, like, switching off and on all the time, which feels really nice. Like, when – I think being the partner of an actor is, like, a very specific thing where, like, I have a lot of sort of very social – my job is, like, very – social front facing. And so she's so good about supporting me in that way. And like, she's working on something very specific right now that is like, I'm very excited to uplift her. So I feel like we have a very good balanced two sidekicks that are pushing each other to be main characters and seesawing back and forth.
Oh, I love that. I sometimes feel like a sidekick main character fluctuation relationship with my sister, but I kind of prefer being in the sidekick role with her. She's younger than me. She's like 6 years younger. And I like being her sidekick because that means I get to get like furious and say wild shit. Like the sidekick is the one who gets to like say irresponsible things and be like, let's get him. You know, like the main character doesn't have to be the one that's like, let's get him. The side character does that. And that's way more fun. So I think my sister and I sometimes switch off. Like we don't see each other that often because she lives in, you know, Minnesota. But when we do, there's like kind of energy that's sort of like – kind of switches back and forth. And as the older sister, being a sidekick is like a fun little switch of roles. Okay, main characters / sidekicks / switch hitters of whether or not you're a main character. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about Sanity Corner and I Feel Petty.
The What A Day podcast you know and love is shaking things up. You already know that 5 days a week, I, Jane Costin, bring you the need-to-know news and expert analysis on the big stories shaping today and tomorrow. Stories like how social media warps our perception of the world and the strange reality of who is signing up to work for ICE. All in less time than it takes to roast a chicken. And now, What A Day episodes will be hitting your YouTube and podcast feeds in the afternoons. You'll get the breaking news even faster. Check out What A Day, now dropping in the PM on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, welcome back. No announcements for the class this week. Let's just get right into Sanity Petty because Alyssa and I have been planning our Sanity Petties for literally days, and they're extremely cunty. I'm just going to say that.
Super, and
I am, I'm applying the cunt label to myself. I own it. I embrace it. And that's fine. I can live with that. I'm feeling petty, guys. Kellyanne Conway is getting a divorce. Love is not real, I guess. If the Conways can't make it, if two people publicly feuding over Twitter can't have a long-lasting marriage, then I don't know who can. There was an article, though, in the New York Times about the divorce that had a paragraph in it that I was like, this is delicious, and I wish I could just inject how the reporter felt writing this paragraph into my veins because it is delicious. Okay, here we go. In a text message on Saturday, Ms. Conway denigrated the reporter writing about her divorce for having, quote, the Gossip Girl beat, and referred to Mr. Conway as Kellyanne Conway's husband. Ms. Conway added that he was often quoted in news stories despite having, quote, no expertise. By the way, Kellyanne Conway's husband, for, you know, call him a political gadfly, hanger on, whatever. He has been in D.C. for so long, and he absolutely does have expertise to weigh in on things that he was weighing in on. Anyway, back to the article, implying that journalists did so just to put her in an awkward position. So Kellyanne Conway, in a comment to the reporter writing about her divorce, accused the reporter, insulted the reporter, not a good idea, referred to her soon-to-be ex-husband as Kellyanne Conway's husband, said he was an idiot. Also implied that people wrote articles that quoted her husband just to make her look bad. Ms. Conway has long maintained that any interest in her husband was part of an effort to undermine the standing of a prominent conservative woman. You know how we talk about men having the audacity? I really think Kellyanne Conway is a pioneer in having the audacity. You know? Like, imagine thinking that entire major media outlets were structuring news stories around making one presidential advisor feel weird. Imagine that. Imagine thinking that about yourself. Imagine thinking that about yourself. Just incredible. The audacity is incredible. Is it okay to laugh about people getting a divorce? I say yes, if they're bad people. It's absolutely okay to laugh about bad people getting a divorce. Alyssa, I don't know. I think it's funny. We all saw it coming. I think their kids are out of the house. So it's like, you know, I hope that their kids are okay. But I feel like,
well,
maybe.
You know that they just didn't get divorced sooner because they didn't want to give anyone the satisfaction.
I mean, like, yeah. I'm getting 100%. The satisfaction. I'm fully getting satisfaction. Like,
I mean, back when the daughter was on TikTok, yeah, and George Conway was leaving Twitter, and it's like, it's been falling apart for a long time, and they were like, fuck you, America. We know you think you know what's coming, but we won't give you the satisfaction. Little did they know we'd still be paying attention and enjoying.
I'm just glad they're not getting a reality show. That was my fear through the whole thing. I was like,
You always said it.
I was like, they're angling to be some sort of like, we're pitching to TLC. We're two weirdo assholes who don't get along, but we're married anyway. Like, follow us with cameras as we go around DC being terrible people. I'm glad.
Okay, but would you watch it though?
Yes, I absolutely would.
I would.
I probably would.
It's too mean spirited.
It's, oh, Tien.
I know. I just need like a hint of hope in my reality TV shows.
Sure. That's why you can't watch 90 Day Fiancé the other way. It's too much. Over the top. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what I'm feeling petty about today. And it was very bitchy, and I understand that. And divorce isn't funny unless someone I don't like is getting a divorce, in which case it is hilarious. Congratulations to Kellyanne Conway's husband for his divorce. Amanda, Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty this week?
I have a Sanity Corner, and it's really corny, but today is Women's History Day, and so obviously all of the women who keep me sane in my life, that is my sanity.
Can you name some? Name names. Name
yes.
The women.
Alicia Garza, like times 10. You know, when Stop Asian Hate happened, she was my guiding light, and she really, really helped me through the roller coaster wave of emotions that that, you know, when hashtags go viral. So yeah, I am so grateful to her. I'm grateful to like my astronaut mentors, Ellen Baker, who was maybe like, okay, I'll just say she's very inspirational and has supported me all these years.
That's amazing. When you said my astronaut mentors, there was a part of me that was like, oh, that's a cool way to give someone a compliment is to like call them an astronaut. And I'm like, no, she's literally talking about an astronaut.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
a literal astronaut. It's like my galactic best friend. It's like, no, that's just.
Definitely.
She's got astronaut mentors. That's awesome. Okay, Tien, Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty this week?
Well, I'm going to follow astronaut mentors with my Sanity Corner, which is the soft boil soy sauce egg. I don't know if you're familiar.
I have been making these
on repeat recently. It is a 6-minute soft boiled egg that you then marinate in like soy sauce, rice wine vinegar. There's like many different versions of the recipe, but I in particular do like a little brown sugar, soy sauce, rice wine vinegar, sesame seeds, and some scallions, and you let that marinate over in the fridge. And I like will make 2 to 4 at a time, and then the next day pull one out, crack it over like a little bowl of like steamed rice or ramen, and it is a true like umami delight. So if anybody wants a little salty, delicious, yolky lunch or dinner, try a soy sauce 6-minute egg.
Do you use it with A1 steak sauce, or is that the limit of your A1 use, Tien?
That is the limit of my A1. I have put A1 on salty stuff before, but this is too salty to be doubling up on. I think I would have reached my sodium intake.
I just want to remind listeners that Tien has also used for her Sanity Corner Panda Express.
A1 steak sauce.
A1 steak sauce and those little ice cream cones you can buy at Trader Joe's.
I've literally laid out a whole meal for you.
This is like a 4-course. This is like a pre-fee. Like you go and Tien, it prepares you this like meal and you end it with a little Trader Joe's ice cream cone. I feel like if your wife came home and you had all 4 of those items in front of you, she'd be like, okay, you're very depressed. What can you do?
Or like an incredibly stoned person is having this like prefixed meal.
Do you have a
that
you know
would
what?
Be delicious.
Do you have a recipe for that? That's like kind of a rough recipe you could share. We'll put it in the show notes in case our listeners want to make one for themselves.
Yeah. I'll send the one that I love using the most.
Amazing. Okay. Alyssa, Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty. I already know what's coming and I can't wait.
Okay, you guys. So I happened to watch Ron DeSantis' State of the State the other day.
Ugh.
And I had a takeaway. Aaron, Tien, Amanda, I think Ron DeSantis and part of the Republican Party, I think they have discovered Ozempic. Ron DeSantis, first I was like, did he get a haircut? And also, I want to be clear, this is not fat shaming. If these were not terrible people who hate everybody, I would not be commenting on weight loss. However, I do think it is a pretty good predictor of who thinks they're running for president.
Oh my God.
Back in 2021, Vanity Fair did an article about how, like, every time they noticed whether Trump was losing weight, that it was a 10 to 15% increase that he would run again in 2024. But Ron DeSantis, you guys take a look. His ill-fitting suits are, like, even more ill-fitting.
Yeah.
And Mike Pompeo, let me read you a little nugget that seems somewhat in-fucking-possible. From the New York Post. Pompeo, 58, said he invested in a home gym in his basement with some dumbbells and an elliptical machine where the Post photographed him this week. I tried to get down there 5-6 times a week and stay there for half an hour or so. He says, when asked, this was in response to him losing, him saying he lost 90 pounds in 6 months. And
that's
saying,
not how, that's how he did it. Pounds.
Whoa.
Did he lift him with his face? Is that why he has Ozempic face?
Ozempic face. I don't know, Aaron, but let me just also finish the quote. He said that was it. Nothing specific. There was no trainer, no dietitian, just me.
Oh, my
just
God.
Just me and my Ozempic.
Just me and my skinny pen.
Me and my skinny pen. But anyway, I'm saying I think that we'll be able to tell who's running if we keep looking for Ozempic face on the nightly news.
Right. So Ozempic, for the people who have not been reading the whatever, who have not been keeping up with it, it's a drug that is – it was developed for use by people with diabetes.
Yes.
But one way that is being prescribed off-label is for weight loss. And the way that it works is it – I'm not a scientist in any way, shape, or form, but essentially like – retrains your blood sugar to regulate in a way that you don't feel hungry, and it's really quick to you lose weight really, really quickly.
And it kills your cravings.
It kills your cravings, and that's why you see, like, that's why, like, very, very skinny is back in style in Hollywood, because it's really easy for people to lose weight really quickly by using this diabetes drug off-label.
And a big issue with this, too, is that people who actually fucking need it for their health are having a harder time finding it because, yeah.
There is another drug, but there is another drug that does the same thing that Ozempic does, but it's not for diabetes. It's just for – it's just supposed to be used for people who could – whose health could benefit by losing weight if they're, like, very obese. So that one is supposed to just be for weight loss. And it's supposed to be for people who have already tried to do the other things. I just think, you know, I don't want to snark on – I'm just saying this. I'm not saying this to snark. Ron DeSantis is a husky boy. He's a husky boy.
Yeah.
And that's fine. We've had husky boy presidents before. Donald Trump is a husky boy. But, like, I think that the idea – I think for somebody who claims to hate California and everything it stands for so much, he sure fucking loves our weight loss trends. And I don't think that he should be able to get away with, like – I don't think Mike Pompeo, I don't think Ron DeSantis should be able to get away with pretending that they went down to their home gym, waved some dumbbells around for half an hour five times a week, and lost, like, 80 pounds. It's not realistic. That's not how that works. It's not how it happens. It's bullshit. And I think that it's like – I think we should be calling out and making fun of Republican men who pretend that they're working for this when really they're just doing the same thing that Kim Kardashian is doing, which – whatever. Anyway, so that's a whole thing. But, yes, that's extremely petty, Alyssa, and I totally agree with you.
It's petty.
I think that –
You know, I think politics has been missing unrealistic beauty standards. So this is, I like this.
Yeah, instead of making life better for people, let's make it worse for everyone else, right? Yeah. Like, instead of making it so, like, women don't feel like they need to adhere to, unrealistic beauty standards, let's make men also feel like shit.
Yeah, let's just make it worse for everyone.
That's capitalism, baby. That's how we maximize profits. Okay, on that note, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Jessica Valenti, thank you so much for joining us. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die. Not my sidekick, my ride or die. No.
Right.
Key difference. Amanda and Tien, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you both. And listeners, if you like what you're hearing, please rate, review, share us with your friends, tell people about it, get it on the text chain with, you know, the people that live far away from you. Talk about the stuff we're talking about. If you want to get in touch with us, hysteria@crooked.com. We love hearing from you. You guys are so smart. And there will be another episode of Hysteria for you next week.
Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. And Fiona Pastana is our associate producer.
The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor.
Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.
The What A Day podcast you know and love is shaking things up. You already know that 5 days a week, I, Jane Costin, bring you the need-to-know news and expert analysis on the big stories shaping today and tomorrow. Stories like how social media warps our perception of the world and the strange reality of who is signing up to work for ICE. All in less time than it takes to roast a chicken. And now, What A Day episodes will be hitting your YouTube and podcast feeds in the afternoons. You'll get the breaking news even faster. Check out What A Day, now dropping in the PM on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.